Crouch. Bind. Set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with our very good friends at Guinness. Obviously, we hope you are surviving in your inspiration isolation stations, not chewing too many floorboards or evicting your wife, husband, children from your jolly household. It's been a long time coming, I have to be honest with you, but tonight is homework night on House of Rugby. The boys are presenting their final verdicts on plans for rugby union post-COVID and how we're going to align all the stars, get everyone happy and pull together a product that works globally all the way down to sort of club game. Papers are being shuffled behind the scenes. Speeches are being readied. That is just in the Tyndall household. Hask is desperately wondering what content he's going to bring to the show this evening. First things first, though. Good evening, gentlemen. I didn't get the shirt memo. Tins, you've gone bold with your bold this evening. Yeah. A little present from someone or just a statement of intent?
It was actually a present from Billy Meeks, who used to play for Gloucester and plays in Australia for Super Rugby. It's his thing because he's now gone bald, so he's now started making T-shirts and bits and bobs.
That's for the bald.
Celebrate being bald.
You could probably put one in the post to Hask. By the time it arrives, he will be in your club. Hoff, how are you? What's happening with your shirt this evening? A little lively?
First of all, you want to watch your hairline because it starts behind your ear, Alex. You want to be very careful. That quiff, mate, it's like it's fully back.
I'd rather have a quiff and a tennis ball head than the old... Everyone does love a receder. I will give you that. Everyone loves a receder.
Hask is now letting his run long, so it is looking far more receding because it's not quite... He's very much unkept and ungroomed at the moment, isn't he?
I just don't
If you were on SAS, Who Dares Wins, you would have fully gone indigenous right now because that's how loose you've got with your appearance.
Mrs. H likes me rugged, what can I say?
Take some from the beard and sellotape it back into places it was. That is the thing about getting old, is you lose hair where you want it, you start growing it where you don't. It's sort of one of the rites of passage. Why are you wearing such a lively shirt this evening? What is this of?
So I did some work with Giacomo.
For the larger man.
And bigger gentleman. And they sent me a load of clothes. And I saw this, it was in a nice pristine plastic bag. And I thought, you know what, it's a nice T-shirt. I could roll with this. And I put it on as a very flamboyant shirt. Chloe says that I look like Dennis from Jurassic Park. You know, the one that screws everyone out. It ruins the computers and everything else like that. The big fat guy. And also she says that I look like a washed up bloke from the TV series Ozark that we started watching. But actually, I feel quite flamboyant. I actually quite like it. I don't know. Who cares? No one's going to fucking see me, am I, apart from House of Rugby.
Before we get into anything sort of resembling rugby union, can we also just wish a very happy birthday to your grandmother-in-law, Lord? What an amazing lady. What an inspiration in this time. Do you have a castle? You know the house party app? Is there a sort of castle party for the royals where you can all sort of lean at each other from drawbridges? Have you said happy birthday?
If there was one, I definitely wouldn't be invited to it. But
you'd be on the outside of the moat.
Yes, but... Wished a happy birthday. Kids have managed to say happy birthday to us. So that's
very nice. Did you buy a present?
Full lockdown for her, is anyone? At this present moment in time, the present will have to wait till we probably see it next time.
Good. Well, happy birthday.
We don't send, we like to hand deliver.
Yes, quite right too. Happy birthday to the royal household from the House of Rugby. Hask, you actually put up a photo on your Instagram, didn't you? How did that go down?
I mean, it went down pretty well. There's obviously a few people. Someone bloke wrote to me, "What a Tory you are." I looked at his profile and I wrote about what a virgin you are. I thought we were playing Say What You See, but apparently we weren't. I mean, I love the Queen. I think the royal family is very important. I think lots of people say, "Oh, what do they do?" I think they're fantastic, and I think they make this country great. And I think people don't like them can shut the fuck up and go away because I can't be bothered. There's so much nonsense being talked about in the media. We haven't got into it, but. All the 5G, coronavirus being caused by 5G, all this madness that bored people get up to because they just can't work out that normal people can have a pandemic. I saw the Americans are now protesting that she should be allowed to go to the beach because she's not from Miami, where all the Mexicans are drinking Corona beer and that's why they got it. And you're like, this is what happens when, like, you know, a large amount of population don't have passports and have never left the country. And I saw them all queuing up outside dressed as Confederates and other people with the biggest arsenal of machine guns that our British Army would be proud of. So I just think at the moment the Queen is a shining light of integrity and someone that does a brilliant job. And she's outlasted absolutely everyone. So I think she's fantastic. I don't care what people say. I'm going to put the Queen over everything.
And so say all of us. And I'm delighted to see you've drawn a line through flat earthers in the only 30 seconds of this show.
Yeah, do you think, I watched that as well. People are like, what do you think, what happens goes beyond? I got into an argument once with flat earth and I went, yeah, but the moon's round, Mars is round. And I go, why is every other planet round? We're flat. They're like, well, you know, how do you know? And I went, because you can fucking see they're around from up here, like from Earth, and like, well, ours is flat. You know, there's an agreement where if you go to the edge, there's like more ice walls and stuff. And I was like, well, what happens after that? Well, we're in a globe. Shut up and go back to school, you morons.
Right, good. Tim, any points you'd like to contribute, or just a lot of paper shuffling going on? Move on.
I'll leave that rant.
Can I talk about the charity? Right. Alex,
oh, yes, do. How was that? Well, I dialed in for about 30 seconds of your thing, but how the hell did you manage to get through from start to finish?
Okay, so anyone who watches this podcast, right, every time I look, I venture to look into the feedback on House of Rugby and like see if anyone's being nice, I'm always confronted by the following comments. If you tune into House of Rugby at any time Haskell's talking, does he ever shut up, right? So I'm fully aware I talk a lot. To do 10 hours, or 12 hours it was, from 10 till 10 p.m., was the hardest thing I've ever done. It was so tiring, just talking. I was so bored of myself by the end of it. but incredibly, we raised about £14,000-£15,000 for Sebastian's Action Trust. Tins, Zara, Alex, you all joined in. We had, do you know what? We had so many guests.
You had some proper goodies, which makes your FaceTime challenge look very poor.
I know. I was very disappointed. The only person who actually, I know, Chloe went, you have got some friends. My only real disappointment was Caitlin during the live FaceTimed me on my phone. And I said, look, we're actually on live now. Can you call back on Instagram? And she didn't, because she said she didn't have great signal or whatever. So that was the one that would have been a great one to pull out the bag. But £14,000, all from people donating in this difficult time. And if it wasn't for Captain Tom, that selfish old war hero, you know, raising 26 million quid and breaking Just Giving page, we would have probably had some more. But it's really interesting. All the players that we got on, so we had Billy, Chris Robshaw, Marrow, Owen Farrell came out, you know, came
amazing
on social media. Everyone
and
was
is considering a little trip to House of Rugby, just considering at this point in time,
just
but no more.
Just considering.
Go on, Aaron, you know you want to.
But we had all the guys on. Do you know what? I spoke to every single one of them and they all looked really well, all sounded really well. And I think we're just rested. And I just don't think as sports people, we fully appreciate what rest is like. And we're constantly trained that if you're not doing a big, hard session, if you're not flogging yourself, you're not working hard. And I actually feel really good. You know, I'm probably training harder than I've trained. Like yesterday, I did 40K. Today, I did a whole load of like Tabata, 20 seconds on, 10 seconds on Versa, battle ropes, weights, Versa again. And I'm trying to do obviously 5-minute rounds, you know, if the fight stuff happens. But I actually feel quite good.
Should we get into it? Let's make this short and sharp tonight. Let's do a sort of a really coherent, well, that doesn't wander too far. He says 40 minutes into it already. Okay, so these are the rules. Coming up, we're going to dig around the way that the boys would reshape elite rugby in the UK, and they'll select a coach's 15 in the perfect port as well. Have you done that?
Oh, crap, I forgot to do that.
I'm very pleased with mine.
Standards.
Australia in a hell of a hole right now. Players have taken a 60% reduction in wages. I'd love to know what you would have said, Hask, if Wasps or Northampton had just slid a little letter under your door saying, thanks for all your loyalty and service, we're taking away 60% of your pay. Thoughts?
Well, ironically, that's actually what happened when I left Wasps to go to Northampton. So, you know, actually it was probably more. But it wasn't
a letter. Still you signed.
Do you know what? When Tins and I were talking about it first, I think the right thing to do is obviously take the pay cuts, is to support the club, is to adjust to the current situation. And, you know, I think every time we come on the show and we talk about stuff seriously, you know, we don't forget about it, but, it's something to remember that people are losing their lives over this thing. So there's always like economies of scale and different situations. And I think that it is the right thing to do. My biggest bugbear with all this stuff is never the losing of money, never the requirement for sacrifice. It's the manner in which it's done. And that's all I ever ask for, is just a proper dialogue, done in a proper way, in a format, making sure that the right people in the right places and make these decisions. And it's not left to, you know, that's why I give you an example. That's why I love the HIA concussion stuff has been taken out of coaches and players' hands, because that was just a ridiculous conversation. How do you feel? I'm fine. Put me back on. Okay, well, we wanted to play. You have to make these decisions out of people's hands and leave them to proper people and proper authorities. And that's the same thing with the finances. It's got to be done by the right people. So I think as long as it was done in the right way and all the players agreed to it, and it's the right thing to do, then do it. If they were press ganged into it or just told you're doing it, then it's a little bit of a different story.
I think this is going to be a good thing for rugby, because I've said for a couple of years, I think the scale of the how the salary cap's gone up since it was introduced has just been far outweighing how quickly the game has grown. I think, you know, we got to 7.2 remarkably quickly, plus then we now have two marquee players, and spending then gets everyone has to spend more money. I think after all of this settles down, however it settles down, if we manage to keep all clubs afloat, that salary cap for the first time in history is going to have to come back down. And actually, people are going to have a look at themselves, everyone through the game, and look what is right for players. And I think ultimately it's going to come round to changing the global season and players getting paid less, but also to make that work, asking them to not play as many games. It has to change. I think agents have to be controlled within the game in terms of understanding how far they can try and push a club to get a player. I think it's just not controllable at the moment.
The other thing, Tins, I desperately want to get your view on is this morning it was announced that 11 former Wallaby captains have co-signed a letter calling for the current Rugby Australia leadership to stand aside because they believe the game has lost its way. Captains include Gregan, Nick Farr-Jones, Phil Kearns, Simon Poitevin, Michael Liner, who we have obviously spoken to before, Rod McCall, Jason Little, Nathan Sharp, Sterling Mortlock, George Smith and Stephen Moore. As a former England captain, what is that telling you about the situation in Australia?
We've known for a long time that it's bad. Having spoken to him a lot in Japan about it, Georgie Griggs, Timmy Moran, spoke to him when I was in Australia in January. I did actually text them both to try and get some answers about what the plan is. But I did get a little, it was George Griggs' birthday yesterday, so I did get a little message
Happy
back
birthday,
with him.
George.
He said there was a plan, but he didn't divulge that plan with me, unfortunately. But yeah, I think the older guard in Australia is still so unbelievably passionate about their game and being involved in it. And a lot of old players who have sort of hit those caps are kept in and around the game. And I think whether they're used to the best of their ability, I'm not sure. But I think they've just had enough in terms of watching the game when they were playing was so dominant in the, it was up there in the top three in the country and had lots of fans watching. We go back to what we talked about the other day, the good old days. Fans were coming through the door, whether it be Randwick games, whether it be Super Rugby games, and it was just going like that. And it stalled and gone the other way. And I think they just want some fresh thinking about, like what Hask was saying last week, in terms of making the game more entertaining, making it more appealing to the youth over there and making it funner to watch and a bit more razzmatazz, as Hass says. So I think that's what they're gonna have to focus on. But how they're going to do it and who they're going to bring in to then run it, I don't know.
Are your just kids under control?
Yeah,
or they're about to come in.
Is Tedder in here? No, I don't think he is in here.
Tedder's probably doing the gardening, is he?
Yeah.
You know this is staying in, don't you?
Yeah,
I mean, it's a perilous state. And funny enough, we are hoping, A, to have Matt Gitto on next week. So his view on it would be quite interesting if we get the chance to chat to him on Tuesday next week.
And I would imagine his view would be pretty straightforward as well, because he's not scared of coming forward, his Gits.
And hopefully we might have a chat with Michael Liner again. I don't know whether that's realistic at this point in time, but it'd be fascinating to get the views of one of the most respected people within the game on the state of his country. But let's park that for now, and we will come back to it in due course. But obviously, I think the game needs Australia to be up there, and I think the current state is desperate and terrifying from a sort of rugby perspective in that country. Let's move on to the point of the show, and we've done pretty well. It's only been 35 minutes to get to this point. A few weeks ago on the show, we were discussing the perilous state that rugby, and obviously all other sports at this point in time, find themselves at the moment. And after much discussion, I set the boys a little bit of homework to come up and deliver a personal manifesto for how to move rugby forward at an elite level. And obviously very topical as well, because we've obviously got the chairman of World Rugby up for grabs at the moment, Sir Bill Beaumont, against Gus Pichot.
Well, he's having a bit of a nightmare, isn't he?
Who would you cast your vote for? Have you read the manifestos or not?
No. Okay. I've read bits of them both. I get what Clive is saying about Bill being a little bit older, maybe you need some completely fresh thinking into this. But then if you look at what Peach's plan is, what his original plan with World League is, I just don't think that works. Players don't like it. So if you can't get the players on board to start off with it, I think you're flawed from the start. And he's just basically bringing everything back to test match rugby. And I don't think that is the global game. I think there's so much to be played in clubs and pubs around the world. So I'm not sure, to be fair. I'm not sure.
Good. You haven't got a vote.
Who would you go for?
I think it's very difficult. To be honest with you, I haven't read the manifestos in great detail. I think there does need to be a levelling out of the playing field. I think the fact that the established nations get three votes to the tier two nations, one, mean that the game will never progress and grow beyond the boundaries which it currently has. And I think that is a fundamental flaw to the game. But you are asking turkeys to vote for Christmas. And I mean that obviously in a sort of reasonable way. You know, asking Scotland to concede their voting rights means that money goes elsewhere, right? You know, opportunities go elsewhere, and that will affect them. There needs to be much more equality in the voting rights in order for people to be able to progress beyond what we have.
If you take that World League out of it, I would probably agree with what Clive said in terms of Peacham being someone a bit younger, someone a bit fresher. I don't like Bernard Laporte being on Bill's ticket in terms of what he said about Heineken Cup rugby and he just wants to get rid of it. And
that doesn't seem very joined up, even between the two of them. You're not entirely sure that they're both aligned on that.
Yeah, I think if you're going to get radical change, you probably need to bring in a bit more youthful thinking, and so on that you go with Peach, but I haven't spoken to him in depth about where you and then getting a thought of where his head's at. So
yeah,
I did see him in Japan, but I didn't really get to talk to him for very long.
No, I did something with them both, actually. I did a World Rugby breakfast during the week of the final, and they got all the partners together. It was a very interesting discussion, and there's a huge amount of goodwill at the top level of the sport, but I think there's probably also a lot of just an inability to move things forward. There are so many powerful brokers who are not prepared to concede that I think it's a very, very difficult situation to see any real progress.
It's like everything. It comes down to power, doesn't it? I mean, you look at, obviously, everyone's telling Bill Bowman now to kick Fiji off his nomination list because they second his nomination, and the guy who's in charge of Fiji and rugby who's got a lot of allegations against him at the moment. And obviously Dan Leo, being the Pacific Island players rep, is saying, well, hang on, you can't then go forward with this until that's sorted out. Surely if all these allegations are true against him, can he actually stand there and represent Fiji and rugby on a world stage? I don't think he can. So then they have to go through. And you would ask the question, has he ever got to that position if those... things are true. So yeah, I mean, there's one thing you've got to sort out in the first place, that can't happen in the future.
It's sort of fairly symptomatic of these things, isn't it, that we're a week into it, whatever it is, and suddenly one guy's had to remove himself from the equation because Amnesty International says that guy's basically not fit for service. It's just amazing how these people end up in the positions they're in. Haskett, any thoughts?
It's the lack of clarity. It's the lack of, like, the fact is that the rich keep getting richer, the other people don't get a look in. It's just a lot of posturing, a lot of talking. Nothing ever really gets done. Nothing ever really changes. You know, the only thing that seems to change from season to season is they fiddle with the fucking rules and change some shit that no one cares about. And obviously I understand stuff about safety, but other things are just trying. It's like, the best analogy I can put it is that it's rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic as it's going down. You know, they're making it all look good. They're playing the band. They're making sure the music and the buffet's there, but it's like, lads, you hit an iceberg. Do you want to do something about it? And I just think that, you know, you've got to maybe take a couple of steps back to go forward. It's the same thing I said about the Premiership. You know, who's in charge? Who's in charge of the Premiership? Is it Premier Rugby? Is it the RFU? Is it the clubs? Well, rugby, is it the unions? What authority do they have? What are the authority they have? How can people have two votes and only have one? You know, why is it not a level playing field? I understand that there's different economic powers, different economic pulls, and some teams create more revenue, but we're never going to grow a game. We're never going to get things right. You know, like if you just listen to what Dan Leo says a lot of the time, it's kind of quite shocking, some of the stuff that just goes brushed under the carpet.
I can hear bath time's going really well in the Tindall household. Yeah. Good luck to Zander. He's going to be...
Turn the baby monitor off.
The old baby monitor, that old chestnut. I was going to ask Tins to go first, but do you want to fire into it?
Yeah, well, I just thought because there were two things. The reason is probably mine would be shorter, and if we do it, everyone accused me of copying tins. So I thought I would just maybe go first.
Go, right, the floor is yours.
Okay, so trying to look at the World Game as a whole, there's so many moving parts and so many cogs to it that it's a little bit tricky to get it all into one. I focus mainly on what I feel is my understanding, and a lot of stuff I don't understand regarding the international game and everything else. I think we're all in agreement that we'd love to see a joined-up calendar. Premiership-wise, I'd love to see it as a summer sport. I think that you have to stop thinking that the Premiership is a reflection of local club rugby and everything else and schools rugby. It's nothing. It's a separate entity. It's a business, as is international rugby, and it needs to be reflected as that. So people say you can't have it as a summer sport because of you know, kids playing on hard pitches. It's not what we're talking about. I'm not interested in that section at the moment. So I think it should be a summer sport. I think the Premiership should be ring-fenced, in my opinion, because I think it will create a more attractive game of rugby. I think if you have to, maybe you drop a couple of teams off so you make it a 10-team tournament or keep it a 12-team tournament. But I think that if you want to create a better matchday experience, a better product and attract people to watch the game, then what attracts the people are the big rivalries, are the massive games. And I think that people want to see, you know, exciting, flowing rugby. If you ring fence it, it means that a team, very much like my experience in the Super 15, you know, teams had a game plan, they executed that game plan, and if stuff got sticky, even if they were losing, they were able to keep playing that flowing rugby. You know, if there's pressure on around Christmas time, everyone craps their pants and goes back to just winning at all costs. And I think that would create a bit more variety. In my league structure, whether you go for 10 teams or 12 teams, I'd have every team play each other just once, and a home and away. Yes, you would lose revenue from the sort of hospitality boxes for the home games per se, but I think you would generate more from sponsorship and revenues from, you know, the bigger spectacle of watching the games and packed out stadiums. You know, you'd see a lot of these teams go into stadiums that have just no, you know, nobody in them. You know, you've got someone like Wasps filling, you know, they've got, I think it's a 36,000-seater stadium. They get 16,000-17,000 in there. You know, Bristol never get 25,000 at Ashton Gate. I also think that these derby games will become much more relevant to the team, so you won't get Saracens sending down a second team to play London Irish. You know, you'll have to consistently play your best sides, which, you know, might actually, with less rugby, mean that you don't have to have such bigger squads potentially. You should aim to have more prize money in the Premiership. You know, you're removing any other tournament apart from a Heineken Cup style European tournament. You just have the Premiership, but you encourage more prize money in there, so teams are more eager to win and to do better. I said, obviously,
is that a genuine thing? Would that genuinely incentivize players?
Yeah, well, I don't think it was incentivized players. I think it was incentivized clubs. You know, for example, the reason teams put money into the LV Cup or whatever the hell it's called and all the other things is because you get more prize money from them than you do from the Premiership. So what's the point? You might as well drill all that into a Premiership. So it's meaning that you have big derby games. You could almost have a derby weekend if you could manage it. So you've got your, you know, your Leicester Wasps on a weekend, your Gloucester Bath on the same weekend. It's a super, super Saturday of rivalries, etc., that you could do, which would really mean you fill out the stadiums. I think also you should move the finals around, Premiership finals around, and get into some more football stadiums if they'd let you do it, to try to get reach out to a different audience, to a different spectacle. I'd ban plastic pitches. I don't think any player wants to play on them. I think they're a completely crap investment. I think that you're better off taking that money and using it to improve our... I'm not talking about kids playing. You know, if kids and rugby clubs want to do it, you know, local rugby clubs, that's fine. But Premiership players, it's not about that. Nobody wants it. No one likes it. No one wants to forget about it. I would use the money elsewhere. I'd use the money to help develop actual local rugby clubs. Obviously, the whole idea is to improve match day experiences. I think by playing them, teams once every season, you're going to get much more of a spectacle, much more focus on fan interaction. TV coverage has got to be improved. I think the rights should be bundled together and sold to one channel that people have access to and be able to watch it. I think social media, both in players and clubs, has to improve. I would also, players-wise in the Premiership, I might even look into putting a transfer market system in there to try to encourage...
Oh, nice.
You know, try to encourage players to be able to go from club to club. Also, you know, move money around. You know, you could almost look at a draft system if you wanted to, you know, to keep that
level of competition.
Yeah, keep that competition up. And yeah, and I just think, you know, and then obviously the Heineken Cup for me is the biggest tournament. It has to be, you know, it has to be like the Champions League in football. And I think you just have to have the best the best there, and all that's the only tournament the players play outside the Premiership. And it means that because they've got less games in the Premiership, they're able to put their best sides out into Heineken Rugby. Everyone's having those big weekends. And I think that's essentially what I would say.
Your manifesto for election. I have to say, you've put a lot more work in than I thought you were going to. So on that basis, congratulations.
I've got one thing, because of we talked about Restart Charity and everything else like that, and the fact that we have all these Premiership Sevens tournaments and stuff that kind of go on. You know, we used to have the Middlesex Sevens where if you went down, you used to get to see Premiership players because it was in the middle of the season. Yeah, it was a great day. I think it was a great thing. But you know, you have all this Premiership stuff, you have all this Sevens stuff, you have some games, you see Saracens sending teams down and focusing on Europe, or Wasps sending teams down, or Northampton sending teams, whatever. Because we've got less games, with more intensity, with big derby weekends, with fuller stadiums, with better match day experiences, we might have some breaks within the season. In the middle of the season, you could have a Sevens tournament, a Premiership one-day Sevens tournament, where actually all the money from that tournament goes to Restart. And you actually get to see Premiership players, you know, play in that thing. So you've got gaps, players aren't overtired, and you get to see, you know, like Svante Watson or Danny Cipriani playing Sevens and get to see them skills, as opposed to getting to see a couple of touches in a game. It's potential. There is obviously also, I'm not going to take tins as thunder, there's also, you could go completely mad and just put the 10 biggest Premiership clubs in, plus Glasgow, Edinburgh, Munster, Leinster, Scarlet Dragons, Ospreys and Cardiff, make one Mon League like that, and have a playoff against your Super 15, your top 14, and do something like that if you want to do. But I've just stuck with the Premiership because it makes more sense to me.
Very good. Sum it up for me in five bullet points. More razzmatazz. Rights on one broadcaster. Talk to me about the structure again, just so we're all clear.
10 or 12 teams, no relegation, no promotion. You've got the very best teams in that league. You're trying to have the best match day experiences. You're having special derby weekends. One broadcaster has access to all of it, access to players, better social media. We have the Heineken Cup. In the Premiership, more improved prize money, sack off all the plastic pitches that nobody wants, make it a summer game, and either try to put maybe a transfer market system in place so the wealth is spread around, so each club's able to survive. And potentially, I would actually reduce the salary cap, but because there's more money in the from winning it, you give players better bonuses. So there's much more of an incentive for players to improve and play better. So you might go, listen, we're going to reduce the salary cap. I was going to go on without a second team because I can't decide whether I want to make smaller squads and get rid of the second team, or run a second team thing concurrently and maybe put some more money in our grassroots club rugby. So we try to make the Championship stuff a bit more of a proving ground so players can transfer, you know, in and out. Do you know what I mean? Like that, potentially.
Yeah. Interesting. So would you therefore, if you were bringing in a draft system or a transfer system, would you therefore open up the books and everybody's earnings are declared? Because if everybody who was out of contract went into a draft system, you know, you would then have a very clear and open, transparent process by which clubs could bid for them, pay them and take them on their books.
That should be a given anyway. I mean, everyone seems to find out what footballers get paid, whether it's right or whether it's wrong or whatever. Ultimately, if you're going to live in a world where you want it to be straight down the middle, then I don't generally have an issue with the books being open. At the time when I was a player, I didn't really want people to know my salary for some reason. But now, since I retired, I was quite happy to tell people what I got paid all the way through my career. And I don't think it's that much of a big issue. You work hard enough, you're not getting football wages at the best of times. So as Hass said, he wants transparency. I think if you do have that, it does open it up. I'm not sure where I sit, like Hass, with the second team stuff. I do think that players should be getting proven at playing against men. And if you can't put that into a second string team, then maybe you have them on your books, but they are always loaned out to clubs. And then you can have a draft system at the end, or you can pull them in throughout the season. People can bid on them throughout the season or something if they're playing in the Championships and you need. So the quality of the Championship will then hopefully go up with the players as well. So, you know, outside of your usual bench, yes, there might be a few you need to keep around, but then trying to get them out and playing rugby at the same time, and that enhances Championship rugby at the same time.
What I really liked about my time in New Zealand was, obviously, all the boys who played Super 15, those who didn't make the squad for that particular weekend would go off and play for their clubs, and you would get a higher quality of local club rugby. So, you know, when I said about sacking off a plastic pitch, and what I couldn't reconcile, and I didn't have enough time to try to work it out, is if you ring fence the Premiership, because you've got less games, you might have less demand for such big squads. You'll obviously have to have some squads because the game is more attritional, but actually, because you're trying to play a more flowing game of rugby, which doesn't have to change because you've got no fear of relegation. I mean, you don't have to try to run through brick walls. Even that's a bit of a nice nuanced idea, because essentially that is professional rugby at the moment. I wanted to make sure that players who necessarily weren't involved in the Premiership could go to, say, the Championship clubs, who maybe got some of the funding, you know, from, you know, reduced spending on plastic pitches and all that kind of nonsense could be pumped into them. So they were like a bit more of a competitive environment. So while they might never feature in the Premiership, players would be working really hard and wanting to play a high level rugby because Premiership clubs would want to feed them in. And it could become a much more of a feeder system, as opposed to, for example, Bill Sweeney said the reason they reduced the funding for the Championships, they didn't see it as a place that Premiership clubs were going to get their players from. But I think you could make it like that. And I think that could feed down, because the club rugby in this country is so important. You know, we all learn from, I had some of the best experiences playing at Maidenhead. All of us have got great experience. But if you could keep that competitive, keep that feeding through, so people actually had some form of ascension to the Premiership, I think that would be really good for the game and much better, and have a lot much more of a link with the Premiership that way, by players being able to go all the way to the top versus just players coming straight out of school and going in. Do you know what I mean?
I agree with that point. I'd like a stronger Championship, and that means clubs not trying to put Championship under pressure for a loan system. They got to pay their salary anyway, especially for your younger players, your A-star academy players, 18 to 20-year-olds. Get them playing against men, learning their trade that will hopefully raise the level. I do like that idea. I think that is a good way to go. You know, even when you're coming back from injuries, you always want another game to go play in just to get yourself back. It doesn't matter how big a name you are. You can play a game for a second team, or you can go on loan for one game just to get you back. It also keeps you pretty grounded on what you are, you know. So things have to be spiced up. The fan experience has to be better. It's got to be, yes, the game's going to perform on the field, but also then everything around it has to be that. They have to sort out what they're going to do around TV. You know, you can't have multiple different competitions, which you won't have with what I'm going to tell you later. It has to be one source, and it's got to be monetized to the maximum.
I tell you who'd be really interesting to check in with on the point about young players going to play proper season of club rugby would be Lewis Lynham. You know, we did a show last year, I think it was, with Michael and Lewis, and he's obviously been in at Quinns, coming through the academy there and learning on a weekly basis, I think, from Mike Brown, but then has spent a lot of time playing for Richmond this year. And I think, by all accounts, has absolutely carved up. And his view on the benefits of having probably gone out on loan and spent some proper time playing some proper rugby in a competitive league, rather than just sitting on an academy contract in the gym and sort of, you know, holding tackle bags, etc., would be very interesting. We might try and pick up with him. You are listening and watching to House of Rugby on Joe, brought to you by Joe, obviously, as we've just said, together with Guinness, with me, Alex Payne, alongside Hask and Tins. Hask has delivered his dossier, and in some style as well, on how he changed the face of rugby after the coronavirus. We've got our Coaches 15 in the perfect pour to come a little bit later on, and Tins is going to get stuck in. Don't forget to check out our House of Rugby short series, which is out every Thursday for you during the lockdown. 20 minutes of good old-fashioned rugby chat with a different guest each week. And also, make sure you download a new podcast from Joe that launched yesterday called Sports Pages, and it digs into the stories behind some of the greatest sports books ever written. The series kicked off with A Life Too Short, The Tragedy of Robert Enke. And here's the author, Ronald Reng, talking about how he discovered that Enke had killed himself. Have a listen to this.
It was about 6 o'clock at night. I actually had spoken to him in the morning for some minor things. I wanted an English journalist, Andy Mitten, wanted to interview him, and I had to call Robert to find out if that was okay with him. He got on the phone, he was in his car, and I could sense he was really agitated, and he just wanted to get rid of me on the phone. And I explained that to myself, that, okay, he's in the car, he's driving, he can't really talk. In hindsight, I know he was driving around to find a way to kill himself. But he said on the phone at 12 o'clock, I call you back at night. It was literally the last thing he said to me. So I was alone at home and cooking when the call came from, actually, Thomas Hitzelsberger, who played for Aston Villa at the time. And he was at that night with Germany. They were preparing for a game, and they got the news more or less first. So Thomas, who was a friend of Robert and myself, called me immediately to bring home the news that Robert had died, and he already knew that he had committed suicide.
Well, that was extremely emotional, and that was also Ronald Reng talking about the tragic death of the Barcelona, Hanover and Germany goalkeeper Robert Enke in episode one of Sports Pages, which is available on your podcast apps. A really good new series. Episode two is out next Tuesday. And congratulations to producer Sai, who's not only producer Sai-ing it, but also presenter Sai-ing it. So the double denim overlord working overtime, it would seem. But do check that out. Really, really strong new start for Sports Pages. Don't forget also our Facebook group, 40,000 of you in there almost, joining in the conversation. Check out our Instagram, which is at Rugby Joe, for photographs, news and behind-the-scenes bits and pieces, as someone close to us might say. And at @RugbyJoe_UK is the new Twitter channel where you can get your rugby news on Twitter. So do follow that if you're not already. But it is the moment that everyone has been patiently waiting for. Just how much effort has the Lord, Mr. Mike Tindall, put into the future of elite rugby? The floor is yours. 3, 2, 1, take it away.
Thank you. I'll start with the Premiership and obviously what happens over here. Unfortunately, the Pro 14 has to bite the bullet.
Right. What are you taking from it?
I'm taking everything. I'm taking all the teams from it, apart from the Italian teams.
And South Africans?
I'll explain later. Oh, and the South Africans have gone too, yeah.
Cool. So it's a Celtic 10. Later.
So basically what I'm doing is I'm taking all those teams in and then I'm splitting it into two pools, which I'm just thinking as we're going on, the Premiership could be have a big sponsor, then each pool could have a sponsor. Each pool will have 12 teams in it, trying to keep as many local derbies within that. Now, there's two ways of doing this. I've either worked it down the east and the west side, but obviously then including Irish teams and Welsh teams in there. So, for example, it would keep Connacht and Ulster in the same group. We'd have Blues and Dragons in one group. I would like to keep Glasgow and Edinburgh in one group, and then we'd work with like Exeter, Bristol, Sale, Bath, Gloucester, Worcester, those down that side. Now, what I have done is there's 12 teams in each pool, so people will have had to come up. That's bringing Newcastle back up. Yeah, bringing up Newcastle, but then potentially bringing up another. So whether we put financial support into the Pirates or Ealing Trailfinders or whoever, but finding another one to give, or we'd have to cull one and have 11 in each, whichever way it goes. Then hopefully keeping those rivalries together, what we talked about, which is what people come to watch, you know, local derbies. And obviously on the other side of it, all the London clubs will still play against each other, getting a lot of fans through gates. With this as well, what I want to do is, because everyone's only playing each other once, so you're only going to have 4 home games 1 year, 5 home games the next. There is obviously knockouts. So there would be a push from money that comes in through TV, CBC, whatever, to push to expand stadiums to try and get more away fans to travel, because obviously there's less games in the league. So you want to make it tickets readily available where you're not having to ramp up prices and you could fill 25, 30,000 seaters every week is where I'm going with. Plus add on what Haas wants with the razzmatazz, make it like you're going to an international match every time. So it becomes big, it becomes fun, it becomes a definite you want to invest in this season. How the season would work, and I have been quite boring because I've actually done the 2022 season.
So you've actually drawn up an entire fixture list.
I have.
Oh my God. I can tell you the dates. Wow.
I can tell you the dates. Of the Premiership. What's happening in Super Rugby and French Rugby. Struggling on Japan at the time.
This needs to be hardbound.
Basically, how the season will work, I was going to play it be top six that go into the playoffs, but because we have more teams over here than what France do and what the Super Rugby will do, I'm not doing it, because then I want all the players worldwide to play basically a similar amount of games to keep it so that every global player welfare can be looked after. So top four goes into a straight quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. To add to games that you'll have at home, obviously the top will play fourth of the other pool. That will be a home game for them and vice versa. Depending on how far you finish up, you will get extra home games. Out of that, so whoever wins, then the quarterfinalists will then go into a shortened version of the European Cup, which if we then flick onto the French and Italian league and maybe a Spanish,
good.
So I'm thinking adding a Spanish team in there would be possible with players from around French moving over to borders, say somewhere in Barcelona or
Catalan team.
San Sebastian, somewhere up that way, which there is a team up there. That would fall into a similar thing, two pools, splitting it. At the moment, I have 10 in the league that I've set out at the moment. We've brought up about four from the Pro de Deux, names from the past. Bayonne, Biarritz. Trying to keep them in semi-areas where they're rivalries as well. So obviously Bayonne and Biarritz would be in the same team, along with like Perpignan. And so we're trying to work that rivalry still. The same would apply to them, but because they have less teams at the moment, it would be the top six that went through. And the top two teams would have a bye week. So at the end of the end of regular season, they would have a bye week whilst the others played off. And then you would do the same knockout once you got rid of those other teams. And then the top eight, so the quarterfinalists from that, would then go into the shortened version of the Heineken Cup, which would be a straight FA Cup knockout, draw out of a hat, home or away, wherever the cards may lay, semi-finals in a big stadium, final in a massive stadium. Then you're going to get the best teams in Europe actually getting in. You're not getting people going into pool stages by the fact that they qualified in six or whatever. It's going to be the best performer of that year. And it's done on that year rather than the previous year. So you know what form they're going to be in when they turn up.
Yep.
That's basically this side of the ocean done. Then what happens at the end of that, the top eight teams of the quarterfinalists of the Heineken Cup will then go into a World Club Challenge. So they'll qualify for that. So going into Super Rugby, a lot of changing in the Super Rugby. So basically, I've split the countries up. I'm sticking with the same format throughout to try and keep consistency, so it makes it very easy for people to do. So there are two pools, again, trying to keep rivalries, but mixed nations. So keeping rivalries from nations, so you're still getting those games, but also then you're travelling as well. But also, I'm trying to get another Japanese team in there, build on their buy-in at the moment. If you look at the thing you sent me from Sportif or whatever, the social engagements, the mass amount of spectators who are now going to Japanese league games, I think we want to put another Japanese team in there. I've even suggested either Argentina put another one in or a Pacific 15 put one in. So you make a Pacific team, build a stadium there that could be the home stadium for all the Pacific Islanders. So if Samoa are playing at home or whatever, you could work it that you could do that. Now, whether it would justify itself in terms of fan base, that's another question. But I think if we're going to try and help them progress and actually become key players, I think it'd be a good idea. Again, same as the French model, because there still aren't quite as much. There are 10 teams at present that I have in each league. So it would go along the same system. The top two teams have a bye week whilst the other fours play off, and then you're into a straight quarterfinal, semi-finals. So just to put it in, Premiership, you are playing a 14-game maximum season, and I'll explain how internationals get week off and players get week off in a minute. Same with the French, and the French league will be slightly different. There'd be one game less. They'd all be 13, and Super Rugby would be 13. Then of the Super Rugby, again, the quarterfinalists go into the World Club Challenge. What we're missing is obviously they don't have, Super Rugby at the moment don't have a Heineken Cup. So what we'll be doing, when we're on that, obviously the Mitre 10, those competitions will be then taking place then, which I'll hopefully explain in a minute. So internationals, still, we talked about this on the phone. I asked you which is better, a three-test series against a team or four internationals against different teams. And we both agreed we liked them both. So yeah, I have kept them, but I've flipped them around a little bit. And it will also depend on the World Club Challenge will mimic one of the tours. So it will go before a tour over here. So then the World Club Challenge will be over here, and then it'll swap when it's over there. So you switch sides, so players might not have to move around all the time. Okay. Hopefully it'll work. There is also a Barbarians game in there. So there are total internationals. There would be, obviously, Six Nations is five games, Rugby Championship is four games. I've got to explain, I've changed the Rugby Championship, sorry. That has got rid of, I know this is, we hate it, so there's not going to be as many Bledisloe Cup matches, but I've brought Japan into that and I've brought Fiji into that. And then it's going to be a straight, like Six Nations, but obviously it's only going to have five. But again, player welfare and the fact that it keeps to a global season and keeps the names a number of games down is a good thing. Rugby Championship, the Six Nations, which are five and four games. Then there will be the Summer Tour and the autumn series, but they'll be switched around. So the autumn series would be in our summer when it's over here, so you can have a three test series, and then the summer tour will be out later in the year when it's getting warmer over there. You play multiple teams over there.
See what you've done. Right. There's a lot of travel there, though.
Yes, but then there's not going to be nothing else going back in. Bear with me. I'm hoping this works in terms of travel. So, okay. Right, if I propose my season for 2022, pre-season will start on Wednesday, the 1st of December, 2021.
Right? Great. Sign them up.
And it'll run through till January the 29th with when your pre-season warm-ups. Then you'd have 4 weeks of club rugby, 2 weekends of Six Nations rugby. Premiership will have 2 weeks off. So international players aren't missing. So they're getting value for money out of the players that they're paying for. Then you go back into rounds 5 and 6 of the Premiership. But then again, internationals will miss round 6. So they are getting rest weekends at the same time. The final weekends of the Six Nations will come in. And then you run to the final, which takes you till June the 4th. After June, you'll have the summer series, which is one test against the Tier 2 nation as basically a preparer for a 3 Tier 1 tests over here. So they'll be against different nations where everyone will travel here at that point. After that, with July, we'd then go back. So the clubs will have time to prepare for the European knockout. So everyone will be fit and healthy. So all players will be back fit and healthy. So you'll have everyone going. The teams that are in the World Club Challenge will then travel. So you've had 2 weeks off after that European knockout to, again, refresh. That'll run from August the 20th till September. Then you'd have another break for a couple of weeks before you go into the autumn series, which would be if the World Club Challenge was in the Southern Hemisphere, that autumn series would be in the Southern Hemisphere. If it was the other way around and it was Europe, it would be over in ours. So your season would finish on October the 23rd and you'll have to look from October the 23rd till December off and then you'd rinse and repeat.
Wow.
Within that, you have the Mitre 10 when the World Club Challenge is on. All the people who aren't playing Super Rugby would then be back playing in that period where that European knockout, World Club knockout is where all the Mitre 10, Currie Cup. So that all your top players from Super Rugby were back at their clubs playing in that as well.
A staff effort. I mean, you have put a hell of a lot of work into that, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it.
I wonder if we could send it off to Sir Bill and to Gus and say, here it is, ready to go, rubber stamped.
The maximum an international player would play would be 25 games.
Okay. The one question I have got is if you are a clubman but not an international and you're playing in the Premiership, how many games are you going to play then?
Yeah, but then what I haven't done, which I forgot to do, is do... Whilst we go off and you play Heineken Cup, there will be obviously a European Shield, which will mimic it, will be for the teams below, which would include probably all the other clubs in the Premiership and in the French
Pro
League.
Pro 14. Yeah, oh, okay. And Pro 14
yeah,
as was.
Yeah, as was. So you will be playing a lot more rugby, which would then include more home games, and it would probably include another 3 home games. That would come back when the World Club and the European Club thing is on. Obviously, there'd be the lesser Heineken Cup, and then... So you would get those games as well. So if you weren't an international and you didn't play, you would still be playing 20 games a season.
Have you run this past anybody else other than yours truly? Have you put it to a current player or administrator?
No, I looked at financially and how it would work financially in terms of, obviously, there's issues around ownership of French and our clubs. So I looked at what it costs to sort of buy every club out and it'd be managed by one union. But obviously it depends on if you own your stadium, how much that stadium then generates for the club and this and that. So it'd take a fair bit of cash to do that. But what I thought with this is at least you are playing for international players and they're not missing your games. So yeah. They won't be away. They would only miss 2 games out of your season. Most of the big stuff is in the summer. Yes, it was starting in February, March time, but
yeah,
you've got to get the first 6 weeks out of the way and then you're not too bad. But most of the high-end stuff will be in the time where people want to watch it. I spoke to you about moving the Six Nations, but you said it's in such a perfect time in March that the fact that there's nothing else really going on that it fits in really well, so we kept it there.
Got to be honest with you, I'm in awe of the effort you've put in. I wasn't expecting the homework. Hask, thoughts? Would you buy in? Would you play? Would you be up for it?
Well, we finally realised why we've got tins on this show. I mean, that's pretty much proved his worth in a complete and utter...
I can't hear Hask. Why can't I hear Hask right now?
It's because it's talking quality.
I was,
I was just saying that you're doing a fantastic job. Mm.
A star for effort, both of you. Hask, within your limitations, you have produced great things. But Tins, I think...
Are you serious? Are you serious?
I think you take it.
Have you just given me an A star down to my limitations? Mate, you are getting so above your station because you're that far away because of quarantine. We'll be back in the studio one
Zoom.
Day.
We'll check your limitations.
Fucking limitations.
Right. We now move on to our second test of the show. This is Guinness Perfect Pour. Our weekly test in 119 and a half seconds, because that's how long it takes to pour the perfect pint. A coach's 15 is the task. Cass, you've had more than most. Have you managed to complete phase two of your homework?
I have actually, with my limitations, obviously.
I'll get
a lollipop. Okay, at number one, you've got Dai Young. At number two, you have Eddie Jones. He's normally a hooker, but I've moved him to number three, Warren Gatland. We'll just get him to put a bit of timber on. Warren Gatland, number three. Number four, Martin Johnson. Number five, I was struggling with another second row, so I went with Alex Brown from when he used to coach. Number six, Jamie Joseph. Number seven, Michael Checker. Number eight, Scott Robinson. Number nine, Shishon Edwards. Number 10, Mike Ford. 11, Dominici. 12, Mike Catt. 13, Andy Farrell. 14, Sam Vesti. 15, Jordy Murphy. Down to my limitations, that's a motherfucking A star.
Multiple choice, you managed to blag your way through it. Very good, James. You are excelling on this week's show. Tins?
Basically, I've got the same front row, Gatland, Jones and Young. Second row, I've got Jamie
two hookers
Jones
in there. It's like, how can you both have two hookers in a front row?
As Eddie Jones, you picking the best players for the position, isn't it? Come on, Alex, with your limitations as an amateur commentator, you must know these things.
So Jamie Jones second and Martin Johnson... In second row, I've got Razzie Erasmus, Andy Robinson, and Michael Checker at 6, 7, and 8. I've got Fabien Galthié at 9, Geach at 10.
Nice.
Philippe Saint-André at 11, Steve Hansen and Clive Woodward in my centres, Mark McCall on the other wing, and Mike Catt at fullback.
It is interesting. There aren't many wingers in world rugby who are coaching. I actually pulled together a proper front row of Ewan McKenzie, Eddie Jones, Dai Young, Leo Cullen and Johan Ackerman in my second row, Jamie Joseph, Rassi Erasmus. I did want Scott Robertson at 7, Scott Robinson, but I went Dino at 8. Fabien Galthié and Wayne Smith were my halfbacks. Mark Jones, the old Wales winger, who's currently with Crusaders. Yeah. Hansen and Woodward, Philippe Saint-André, and I had Conor O'Shea at 15.
I had Ewan McKenzie in, but then I thought, how do you fit Eddie Jones and Warren Gatland in? And as I worked with Ewan McKenzie in Stafford and Stafford, when I turned up, he was a broken man, such a lovely guy. But I went, but the French aren't doing it. And Ewan just went... I just shrugged his shoulders and walked off. I was like, And then 3 weeks later, he got sacked. So, you know... I thought I got a fit Gats in there.
Very good coaches. Very good coaches. It's a shame that you two aren't actually doing it. Tins, do you ever have ambitions to get back into coaching? Were you done with that? You're going into administration after your blueprint for success. So just, you know, horses for courses.
I don't know. I think I would like it if I did go back in, but I'd probably turn full rugby pig then. And I don't really want that to happen again.
Are you available for conversations?
Saying that, administration may be my thing.
Yeah.
No, not currently. I'd always... bend the ear, but I doubt it.
Hask, absolutely no interest whatsoever.
I quite enjoyed being like doing consult stuff around like breakdown or tackle stuff or anything else. I just don't think I have the mindset to like apply the detail and everything else. I'm quite a good team manager, I think, or head of social for a team. They pretty much go bankrupt after the first season, scandal after the first social. But no, I did talk to a couple of Premiership coaches actually about doing some stuff around, because I... contrary to all the, and due to my limitations, all the time that I spent working on my game and doing all the extra bits and pieces and all the analysis I did on breakdown work. And when I was in England, when England camp, you know, Eddie or Paul Gusto or Steve Borthwick would get me to take the other back through, row through certain drills and do certain things that I'd learned from, say, George Smith or whoever it might be. So I quite enjoy that area. It's just that you really have to love it. And the game moves on so quickly. And I just, you know, Eddie Jones, when I sat down and retired, when I told him I was retiring, he goes, mate, what are you going to do? And I said, before I answered, he goes, don't go into coaching. There's no money in it. Make your money and then go into coaching. And I was like, okay, well, why are we doing coaching then? Be seeing you. And that was it.
Wow. That is interesting, actually, because a lot of them are very, like, Checker's a hugely successful businessman, isn't he? And
yeah.
I'm trying to think, there are a couple of others out there who are, now do it because they
Clive
can.
Saw-
Clive?
Jamie Joseph, he's good at business.
You either get the person who doesn't really know what he wants to do, so forces himself to go into coaching, Or yeah. you get people who come back who are better managers, probably because they have been in business and they've built that side of it. If you look at sort of Eddie and Clive, you know, they manage the people and get the coaches to coach. I know Eddie's a hands-on coach, but Clive is more of a manager. I don't know what the best way around of doing it is. Yeah, I'm similar to Ask. Is I think you get asked a lot of a premiership coach. You know, you are in a lot of hours. Maybe you could always work smarter, but you always think you have to be there longer because you're coach, so you have to watch all the video, you have to do this. And Eddie's right, the money isn't great in coaching. I would get more joy out of coaching Minchin Hampton than I probably would out of doing a premiership rugby. But again, I'd like to work with players on individual skills like centres. And because most of the time when you get to, what I found is I hate doing the same drills week in, week out when there's not really a purpose for it. So yeah. It's always what you're trying to teach. The players are good at a very high level by the time you get there. So all you're trying to do is recreate situational awareness and create that experience that you learn from. So why did you throw a mispass there when actually you've just let him drift off? What would you do differently next time? And then work on that side of it. It's not an easy job at all.
Much more fun just to sit over Zoom, have a pint and put the world to rights, isn't it, really? Any other business for this week? Hoff, anything in the diary other than training in your garage?
Are you doing as many, like, catching up with old mates on Zoom calls and stuff? Obviously, I've never been on the phone as long. Bolsh's birthday on the 18th, whatever day that was, 3 days ago, so... Saturday.
Happy birthday,
Bolsh. Literally got on a phone call at sort of 10 o'clock at night. Then Andy Beattie messaged me going, because he randomly bumped onto me, there's an app called like Poker Face. So you can play poker whilst catching up like on a like in the house. Finished at like 3 a.m. with Bolsh and Beattie randomly. On the Friday, I randomly ended up on a FaceTime with Dom and Steph from Gogglebox. And that started at like 10 with one of our friends who's in America, and that finished at like 3. And then we got on one with Huey Edmonds and Jimmy Cowan on Saturday morning.
Oh my God.
At 10 o'clock in the morning, and finished that at 3 in the afternoon. So at least I've caught up with a lot of people.
I can't deal with it. I can't deal with it, the Zoom and house parties. It's 10 people trying to speak and no one can hear what anyone says. And everyone like drops out, freezes, loses it. I mean, if the one thing we've learned about this lockdown is the internet in this country is so wank. It's just a joke. Like, we were in Japan and we're getting 100 meg. And, you know, it was 100 gig, and it was like an absolute dream. Nobody can finish a call here. It's like, John has left the meeting. John is back in the meeting. James is frozen. Sorry, guys, I'm frozen. James is cancelled. It's like, it's appalling. And, what? No, you go. No, you go. Stop. What? No, you go. It's like, just shut up. I said to Chloe, no more. I said to her the other day, she goes, could we have a Zoom call? I was like, Chloe, I put my earphones in, and I just started listening to music while she was talking. I was like, come and talk. I was like, no. Nobody can understand anyone. Nobody can hear. This is bollocks. So until we can prove the internet, that's rule number one, or I can't deal with it.
Very good. I only got about 3 words of that rant, but I imagine it was brilliant. You were dropping out and freezing in between. And on that bombshell, let's press stop and we'll go and do something else. Well done, fellas. Very good effort. I think some very good bits in there. Never easy. No easy solution, but hopefully somewhere. And actually, I would actually just quickly say we are very much open for business. If Sir Bill or Gus Pichot want to come and have a chat about the vision, then anytime. That's it for this week. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening to House of Rugby. Don't forget, you can dig into our entire back catalogue on podcast or YouTube and then talk about your favourite shows on the Facebook group. Don't forget to as well to have a little listen to Sports Pages, the new interview podcast from iTunes or your podcast app. Thank you, fellas. Well done. Good shirts this week as well. Stay safe out there. We'll see you on Thursday with another House of Rugby Shorts. And we'll be back with the next show next Tuesday with the one, the only, Matt Giddo, which I am very much looking forward to. Stay safe, love and hugs. Speak to you soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.